Okay, Rabotai. Today's daf in Masechet Gittin, brought to you from Yerushalayim HaKodesh, is daf Mem Dalet. So, we've been talking about the question of the takona to save the Eved. We don't want an Eved being taken out to Chutz Laretz. We've learned in the Mishnah, we have this knas that the Chachamim made. Somebody who is Meicher and Avdo is Yotz L'Cheirus. And we were in the middle of that sugya. First thing we talked about was, how does this extend to someone who would use his eved as collateral towards a loan? And we talked about when that would be considered to be the equivalent of a mechira. Today, we'd like to know, what would be the din if we collect the eved, but he never made the eved collateral? It's just that he was in a position where the eved was taken from him by force, by the courts, or it was taken from him by taxes, or it was taken from him just because, you know, the government decided they liked the eved. So we'll talk about these cases. Tana Rabba. Gava'o b'chovo. How about if the goy we were talking about over here, the goy was goveh the eved with the chov, and he never had made it a specific lien on the eved. Sikrikon, that was the days. We're going to see more about this later on. We've talked about it earlier. What is the din at a time when basically Jewish blood is cheap, and you can have these anti-Semites going around, they could just take things away, you know, or you could just beg him, why don't you take my eved and leave me free? So in such a case where the person didn't do anything to begur him, the fact that he sold this eved to a goy, in that case, lo yatza lecherut, because this was done bonus. What? Says the Gemara, you're telling me that if it was taken for a chov, a legal chov, even though it was not a miashka, and he didn't make it specific collateral, you're telling me that in that case, we will not be mechayev him to be mishakar the eved, v'ramini? Well, what about this? Here we're talking about not an Eved, but the Goren, where he keeps all of his grain. And the question over here is, what happens to the Chiyav that he has of Maaser when the government of the Goy walked off with his Goren? So suppose the Beit HaMelech took, obviously by force, the Jew's Goren. It says over here, if he owed taxes, and he was actually chayav these things legally, then he's still going to have to pay the miser, because, I mean, basically he ends up paying his debt with the miser if he allows him to take the whole thing together with the miser, right? And he was b'chayav to take off miser for this. So therefore, he's chayav to be a miser. In ban parot, if it was just, they just stole it from him, and it was just a pure loss. So then, he's pater mila aser. But you see from here, that if there is a legal debt, so then it's considered to be the equivalent of having sold it, which is why you would have to take off Maaser. It's not the same at all, says the Gemara, Shani Osam. Over there, the Kamishtar Shele. He is actually getting the full benefit of that Maaser by stealing it, so to speak, because he paid his debt with the Goren, and 10% of that Goren belonged to the Levi. So, of course, in that case, he would be actually Mechuyev to take off the Maaser Mashenkin. Over here, where we're talking about that it was collected. There's no such concept. I mean, it took the Eved. So then he didn't get anything out of the Eved directly other than the fact that the whole thing was taken. Toshma, the Omar Rav. So we said before that he is not Chayev because in that case, he is simply an Onus. And we didn't tell him that you have to let your Eved free if you're an Onus. But Rav said that in the case where we're talking about a covering something that would otherwise you'd have to pay for, that he is Yatzel Echeres, because Amar Rav, Hamocher Avdo Lefarhan Roveko Chavim. So if you, that's something of a question, what exactly is a Farhan? Rashi learns that this is a guy who makes up all kinds of issues, it basically blackmails you into giving him something. It's like a protection racket kind of thing. So whatever it is, either he's going to make sure that you get into trouble with the taxes, or you know, they'll bust your store down. But a protection racket. So you give the guy as the eved, you give it to him as the farhang. Tosus learns that the farhang is somebody that will take it, even though he would paid for what he takes. So Yatza L'Cheres there also, Yatza L'Cheres, now that should be the equivalent of people walking off with your Eved. No, no, there's a big difference because over there, you give it to him. So you could have given him something else. You could have said, you know, take my car. Instead, you said, take my Eved. So over there, Avilei L'Fayis, you should have tried to get something else to him instead of your Eved, but you didn't. And instead, you gave him your Eved. And by doing that, you're basically making it impossible for that Eved to be a Shomer Shabbos and so on. So that's exactly when we go ahead and give you that knas for having used your Eved in such a way that deprives him of his ability to be Shomer Mitzvahs. Gufa, looking into what it was that Rav said. Amar Rav, Amolcha Rav Dola Farangavet Kochavim Yatza L'Cherut. So let's just take a look at it on its own without looking in context of what we just said. Well, what exactly do we expect a guy to do? My Havilei L'Eved. I mean, he's being blackmailed. Well, Havilei L'Fayis, V'Lo'Piyeh. So we spoke about it on the spot. And it turned out that it only makes sense in that way. Forget about the contradiction. Anyway, so the Mishnah says that any time that you sell, it's considered to be this knas, you're going to have to free him. But what exactly do we mean by a sale? And let's say that a guy sells his Eved for 30 days, which basically is more like renting his Eved, right? So he sells him for 30 days. At the end of the 30 days, the Eved's going to come back in. Do we force him to be meshachar his entire Eved because of a 30-day sale? Or is the din only where somebody permanently has taken his Eved and put him into a position where he's not going to be able to be a Shomer Shabbos? What's the halacha? Tashma, Diyamarav. Then we just had this case of Hamocher Abdullah Farhang Oved Kochavim Yatza L'Cherut. Now, normally, a Farhang will not, I mean, necessarily be talking about a permanent walking off your Eved. The Farhang, he wants to use that Eved, and therefore, we're taking for granted that we're talking about a case even where the Farhang was going to return the Eved after 30 days or 6 months, whatever it is. You see from here, that makes no difference in Rav Paskin, that you actually still have to be Meshachar the Eved. Not necessarily. We might be talking about a farhang oved kochavim sheino chuzaret. It's the type of oved kochavim that will not return ever. Okay, another question, says Rabbi. I have another question of what is considered to be a sale. Suppose you sell the eved, but you make a condition. I am selling this eved to you only as a stud. You cannot use him for work. You can only use him to make children. So if you want him to impregnate your amahot that you've owned, that's fine. But I'm not selling him to you for you to work. All right, so what's the din over there? Chutz mi'olachto. Or, suppose you make a deal. You can use this Eved, but you're not allowed to use him in any way that will cause him to be destroying his chiyuvim. He's got to be able to keep his mitzvahs, so you can't tell him to work on Shabbos. Or suppose you simply make a condition. The Eved is yours other than on Shabbat and Yom Tov, where he doesn't have to work for you. So would that be enough to cover you and we wouldn't be mechayev you to be meshachar the Eved? Or what about if you sold the Eved to a Kuti? Now, if you sold him to a Kuti, and then the question is, even though the Kuti Lamaisa is Shomer Shabbos, but he's not Shomer Shabbos, I'll leave all the dinim of Shabbos and so on. So is that considered to be the equivalent of selling him to an Akum or not? So these are a lot of different variations on the theme of selling that Rabbi Yirmiyah raised, and we weren't able to get to the bottom of all of them, but one of them we do have a raya to from the Braita. Pshot miyachot. Ger toshav harei kovet kochavim. Here's how long if you sell the Eved to a ger toshav, so then it's the equivalent of selling him to a goy. Kuti v'Yisroel Mumer, and if you sell him to a Kuti and a Yisroel Mumer, so then Amri like Oved Kochavim, Amri like Yisroel. So that basically there's a machlokes about what the din would be if you're selling him to someone that himself is not a Shomer Shabbos. Then we consider that person to be the equivalent of a sale to an Akum or not. Now, we said you're not allowed to sell to a goy. Now, the question is, suppose you have no way of getting him back from the goy. So, by Minei Mirabaamim, Let's say, an Eved, you didn't sell him, but this Eved wanted to get away from you. He goes and he gives himself away. Hello, here I am, how about capturing me? So he goes and gives himself away to a gang, and they are Gayasot, and they're Ovdei Kochavim. You have absolutely no way of recovering him. The courts are refusing to deal with it. In Rabo Yochol Ohotziyo, Lo B'dinei Yisrael, the Besdin doesn't have the power to be able to fight the gangs, and Lo B'dinei Ovdei Kochavim. So what's the din? If you're offered money, so these Ganovim, they want to be Machshir, the Evet, for themselves, make it all legal, we'll pay something for the Evet. If you take that money, would that be a sale? So Amalei Rabbi Yomiel, Rabbi Zerika, Pokayin b'mechiltech, you better go out, go through all of your things that you've learned and review them to see if you can bring a riot. And so Rabbi Zerika did exactly that. Nafak bak v'yashkach, a tiny, he found a bright that says, Hamocher beitolo oved kochavim, somebody sells his home to a goy, and you're not allowed to sell your home in Eretz Yisrael because of the Yisrael of Lotechanim, which one of the explanations, Lotechanim is Lotitein lem chanaya ba'aretz. So you're not allowed to sell your house in Eretz Yisrael to a goy. And you went out and you did. So the din over there is that any money that you got in the transaction is the Rabbanan Rukenis, you're not allowed to be nina from selling the house. But what about in a case where an Ovei Kochavim was anas beitor shel Yisrael? He basically stole it from you, threw you out of the house, and again, the Jewish courts don't have the power to fight him. The Goyish courts aren't interested in helping out a Jew. So, ein ba'alav yecholo etzio lo b'dinei Yisrael v'lo b'dinei Ovei Kochavim, which is exactly the question that we asked a moment ago about what the din would be in terms of an Eved. Would that be considered to be okay to take the money ex post facto, since you never sold them, you're just basically getting your money back? So what would be the din? So it says over there, you are allowed to. Mutali tola damav, you're allowed to take the money, any money that they offer. Not only that, but then you can go, in order to get that money, they want you to go to court and to sign that this was all done, you know, with my free will, and the court signs on it, and you're going to make it into a real, meaning forever, you're never going to be able to get that house back. You could do that too. Kotevu ma'aleh b'arka'ochelam, you go to their courts to make it all supposedly legal. You certify it. Why? Because a person has a right to be matzil his money from them. So mipnei shehu k'matzil mi'adam. What, by the way, is the issue about going to the court? The Rashi learns the issue of going to the court, that it's an extra chiddush, is that by going to the court, you give chashivut to the goyim. Tosfos brings other cases where it's not a din in matzah miyadam, and we always allow you to go to arka or to hakam. We don't consider that, if this is the way in which you buy a property and so on, we don't consider that to be giving chashivas to the goyim, and that's not the problem. And therefore, Tosfos learns that the issue of going to the court is that you are then mifarsem, that you actually sold it to a goy, and it looks like you sold it to a goy, afal pikein, since this is an opportunity to be matzah, your mamon, you're allowed to be matzah the moment. So you see from here that it's okay even if you're going to take money. As long as you didn't do the sale, it's all ex post facto, and it's a way to be matzah, then that should be the din about the Eved as well. Says Gemara, well, not 100% sure that this covers the case of the Eved, because Dilma Hani may buy it. To give it a little sagi below buy it, lo atilis vune. The idea of taking the money ex post facto makes sense when you're talking about a house, because there's no basis for us to really be concerned that a person is going to upfront sell his home to a goy. You need your home. How many times would a person be able or willing to sell his home? So lo ati lizbune, mashen ken an eved. A person can get along without an eved. So if we're going to be matir him to take the money ex post facto, this is basically going to get people into a situation where they'll make it look like the Eved was taken and they'll only take the money ex post facto. Leaves open too many doors to hanky-panky, and therefore maybe it's not really a riot as to whether we would go so far as to allow you to accept money for an Eved. Or low, or not. I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you for sure, but I could certainly see, says the Gemara, that there may be a difference between a house and an eved because of this possible gezerah. Anyway, do we have a psak halacha? We do. Because Reb Ami was sent this as a shaila, and he gave a public teshuva on this issue. Sholach lo Reb Ami, bum, 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 mini Ami bar Natan. This is issued from me, Ami bar Natan, Torah yotza l'chor Yisrael, a teshuva meant to apply to all. Eved shepil atzmo l'gayasot, ve'in rabo yachol otzio lo b'dinei Yisrael, ve'lo b'dinei Akum, mutar li'tol et damav. I'm paskening that it is okay to be matzil, kotev u'ma'aleh bar kaor shel Akum. You can even go to court and have it all written out as a legal bill of sale, and that is clear to everyone that it was something that was force majeure. Omer Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Now, if you sell, now you need to buy him back. Forget about the question of the shichrur. You sell a guy, your eved, then the chachomi put a knas on him, and I don't care if it costs you 100 times his value. Keep upping the money until the guy's ready to sell that eved back to you because you were over on selling, and we make you actually buy it back at great expense. Oh, do you mean that literally? Yes, they wanted dafka. When you said 100 times, is that like a shear, a specific shear, or like it's just an exaggeration that you're going to need? I mean, obviously, you know, you put yourself in the guy's hand that he keeps blackmailing you for whatever he wants. I mean, that's in the dover. So it just means that even though he asks an unreasonably high amount, that you'd still have to pay it. Or did he literally mean that? Well, Tashma will prove to you, the Omer Reish Lakish, we have the same kind of Isra, obviously based on completely different issues, but not as different as you think. If you're going to sell a Behema Gasa to an Oved Kochavim, we answered you to sell that Behema Gasa. You know why? Because he might work on Shabbos. That sounds sort of the same. But obviously, there's not really much of an Isra on your Behema to work on Shabbos unless it's your Behema. Over here, you're selling it. So as we learned, the question over here is a takana that we're nervous that if you sell a large animal means an animal that's suitable for farm work. Suppose the goy comes to you, wants to buy it on an Erev Shabbos, and he wants to try out the animal. That's right before Shabbos. So there's a number of very dangerous possibilities. I mean, you might actually allow him to try it out before Shabbos, in which case your animal will be working on Shabbos. You might allow him to rent it out for Shabbos, in which case he's using your animal because he wants to try it. He says, let me try it out. Or you might actually go through the sale right before Shabbos. You know what happens when that happens, right? That's exactly when the car won't start. So what happened over here is the stupid shore won't start. So how do you get the shore to start? You, the owner, yells at him, and so you get moving, you, and so on. But that's called mechamer. So if that shor is now working, he's carrying something, you're going to be mechamer achar b'emtecha, then you're going to be over on Chil Shabbos, which is mechamer achar b'emtecha b'Shabbos. Anyway, so because of that, we didn't allow you to sell these large animals to a goy. And over there it says, konsino to ada sara b'dameha. So this is over there. We make you pay 10 times as much as it was actually worth. So then that means that when we're making a takana that we want to actually give a reasonable share for, the 100 is like an exaggeration. On the other hand, we do have to provide some indication. Here is where we provide the indication. 10 times, that's what we mean. Well, I mean, not necessarily. If I can tell you that there's a difference between the eved and between selling the behema that would account for the 10 versus 100, so then maybe both of them are dafka. So duma shiny eved. An eved is a disaster. I mean, for the rest of his life. Kol yuma v'yuma mafke lemin mitzvahs. You're going to be preventing him from doing any mitzvahs. So over there, yes, we're going to give you 100 times. Go buy him back. I'm going to hang what it's going to cost you. Ashenkein, okay, you did something wrong. You sold your animal to the guy. I mean, okay, so it may come out that there'll be one issue over there that he'll use the animal on Shabbos. Fine, so maybe over there ain't nothing happening. We only work an issue 10 times. And the whole thing, we also came from another point of view, because there was an Ikedi Amre in which what Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi had said was not that you pay 100 times, rather you pay 10 times. So Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi, in this new version, HaMocher Avdo Levik HaChavim Konzinoto Ad Asara Bedamav. And there, again, the Gemara asked, is that Dafka? Is 10 times? I mean, is it possible that if the guy refuses to sell it for more than 10 times, maybe you would have to sell it even for more than 10 times? Tashma, the Omer Rish Lakish, HaMocher Behem HaGasel Levik HaChavim. In this version, what Rish Lakish brought was that if you sold an animal that is a farm animal, a work animal, could see no to ad mea bidamea. So this is the exact opposite of the circuit we had before. So apparently, 10 is just, usually you won't have to pay more than that, but if you need to, you need to. Well, again, not necessarily. I mean, an eved, remember, besides the fact that you have to buy him back, remember that you have to also give him a get shichrur, right? So, I mean, you're never gonna get that eved back. So that's why we can't do the same vicious knas to you that we would have done for an animal. An animal, you'll get the animal back. The eved, you won't get the animal back. They have it back. What? What's the sense in that? So then add one more time. I understand. Well, we're doing a big favor. Wow. Thank the good Lord. You got the animal back. So therefore, you should buy it back for 100 times more. As Rashi says, oy vavoy, to favors like that. Thank you very much. So if the most that we should do is we should make it 11 times, if that's 10 times, make it 11 times. I mean, this makes no sense. Likdus ei tveichat, that can't be the difference. Okay, maybe the difference is like this, that the reason that we don't make this major, major knas is because avadim people don't normally sell. And therefore, eved is a milta lo shchicha. Milta lo shchicha, the rabbanon are not that makbid on to worry about needing to extirpate this type of behavior. This is not a normal kind of behavior. So Mashenkin, when it comes to animal dealings, I mean, people deal with animals all the time, and they felt that the only way that they would be able to make certain that this is not going to happen is by really putting on this major knas. Maybe, I mean, I don't know. Or it could be the whole thing is lav dafka. Maybe both of them are lav dafka. Maybe the knas is you got to get it back. I mean, hell or high water. I don't know what it's going to cost you. Now, another question is like this. This knas, is it dependent on you being the individual who actually did what was wrong? Or is it a fine against your property? I mean, this makes a big nafkamina. Because let's imagine, as Rabbi Yirmiyahu pointed out to Rabbi Asi, what would be the din? Somebody sold the eved. Okay, so now he really messed up. He's mechuyev to buy that eved back. And before we're mechayim to get the eved back, he dies. Now his son inherits his estate. Are we going to make the son buy the eved back? Or do we say, well, son didn't do anything, so why should we give him a knas? That's my question. Is it a din in the son, or is it a din in the money? Now, I know that we've raised these issues several times, but I don't think that those other times are relevant. Let me show you the difference. For instance, we raised this issue in the din of a Kohen who made a mum in the ozen of a Bechor, right? So he was Tzoram Ozen Bechor, and then he died. So over there we also had a question. Konsu beno achara or not? Now we didn't decide over there, but let's say that we would. But that could not necessarily prove our din. I'll tell you why. Because in that case, the father had done an Isser D'Oraisa. It's an Isser D'Oraisa, put a mum in a Bechor, to put a mum in Kodesh, right? Kol mum lo yevo. That answers you to make that mum. So maybe the Rabbanon were very makbid over there that it's a knas against his estate. And therefore, maybe the child would have to pay. Mashenkin over here, where the Rabbanan were the one who made this is to understand that you were going bad things, but to call it an absolute Isser. So mid Rabbanan, it's yes, it's an Isser, but it's an Isser Rabbanan, so maybe they didn't make the Chumrah against the estate, they only made the Knas against the father who did it. Okay, I got another case. I know you're going to ask me about this other case. There's a Din of Kiva in Melachto Lemoed. Kevin Wachter Lemoyd means that if somebody knows that he has work that needs to be done, it's getting close to Yontif, and he says to himself, you know what? If I don't do this work once I start it, it's going to become a Dover HaAvah. So I start a process, and then they tell me, you got to stop. If I would stop, then I would lose all my money. And you're allowed to do a Dover HaAvah during Chol HaMoed, right? So I know what I'm going to do. I am going to work it out that just at the time of Chol HaMoed is exactly when I'm going to start this. Then they're not going to be able to stop because it's a Dover HaAvah. And I thought, well, I'll tell them it's a Dover HaAvah. And it's mutter. So because of that, if you recall our dinim, when we were learning Moed Katan, that the halacha is that in the event that somebody went out of his way to work it out, the things would just come out during Chol HaMoed, and that way he would get away with doing them during Chol HaMoed and wouldn't have to waste his time, that we give him a knas and we stop him, even though it's a Dover HaAvah, it can all go to waste. Now the question is, what if he died before he did it? And now his son is there. His son is faced with this terrible loss because the father has left to the last minute to do something. Now, the father didn't do anything. The father just didn't do things. So the question is over there, let's say that we did not give a knas to the son in that case, but I could explain that away. That's because it was passive. And the father didn't actually do the iser before dying. He never worked during Chol HaMoed. So maybe that's why we would not penalize a child, because the father didn't go ad kidei kach, we didn't go ahead and make it a din in the estate. What about over here, where the father definitely actively was over on the iser d'rabbanan of the mechira of the eved? So we still have the same kash. Here's my question. Lididei kantzu rabbanan, when we give these knasot, is it because it's chal on the individual who did the iser, and in this case, he is the one who did the iser and not the child, or is it alete, he died? Odilma lemamoni, is it a din against his estate? And if that's the case, then kotzer abonah, then of course, vahayite, the money is here, and as long as the child is able to pay whatever, 100 times the value to buy it back, and he can take it out of the father's estate, then that estate is actually mukhuyev to pay up. Whoa, what's the din? Omale says, Ravasi to Rabbi Yirmiyah, well, you know the answer, you're just not thinking. That is the Mishnah that we had in Mesechet Shvi'it. And it goes like this. A sadesh nitkavtza b'shvi'it. So what happens is, remember, we have different melachas that are d'oraita and the melachas that are d'rabbanan. So the things that are d'oraita is the satchalot tizra, karmachalot tizmor, becharish ubekatsira. So we have charisha, katsira, and we have zemira and zuriya. So you remember those four specific melachas. Now the question is, if you do avodas karka directly, so then it's considered to be similar to charisha. But if you were just nitkaftza b'shvi'it, so what did you do? You cleared off the loose thorns. You never touched the ground. What you did is you raked off all of the thorns, vacuumed off the thorns. That's called nitkaftza from the word coats. So you took off the thorns. That means that you were over on the drabbana. What's the din? After shvi'is, you would be allowed ex post facto, you would be allowed to go ahead and use that field. You could go ahead and do the Zriya on Metzoy Shvias because we did not give you a knas since you only prepared the field through an Isidra Rabbana. But if you actually fertilized the field, Nitaiva, so the actual ground was changed, or Nidaira, Nidaira is where you fertilize the field by putting your sheep on that field and having them stay in that field for a while, which will automatically be fertilized them with animal dung, lo tizara lemotzei shvi'it. In that case, since you were over on an iser d'oraita, this is the way Rashi understands it, but because of that, lo tizara lemotzei shvi'it. Now, what's this nogea us? Because for Amar Rabbi Yosef Rebbe Chanina, Naktinan, we have a Kabbalah from our Rebbe, that if a person did such a thing, and he died before the mitzvah shvi'it, the child is allowed to do it. And we don't say, since the father was over on an iser d'oraita, the son is not allowed to plant the field. So what do you see? You see that these knasot are knasot that are imposed on the perpetrator and not on the estate. So Alma Ladidei Kansur Rabbanan, Livrei Lo Kansur Rabbanan, and that should be the halacha over here as well. Now, the truth is that not everyone agrees at all that fertilizing is the equivalent of the Yisur D'oraisa Charisha. In fact, Tosfos says over here that it is not. But anyway, it still would be the riot to a Derabbanan, and we were talking about a Derabbanan too. Om Rabbi, Naktina, we have another Kabbalah. Let's look at this issue as well. Somebody goes ahead and he causes Hezek She'eno Nikak. So for instance, his next door neighbor is a Kohen and he goes and he's Metame the Tyrus. Disaster, but it's not noticeable. Just turns out that he's not going to be able to use it. So the Rabbanan were mechayev people to pay for Hezek She'eno Nikak. But that's a Knas de Rabbanan, if you hold that it's only this de Rabbanan. So in that case, Lo Kansu Rabbanan Benoach HaRab. And that is a Kabbalah. Why? Because really, we pass that Hezek She'eno Nikak is not considered to be Hezek in terms of the Din D'oraisa. And it's only a Knas de Rabbanan that you should have to pay for it. And the perpetrator, and only the perpetrator, was Bechuyev to pay. So we have yet another raya that in these cases of knas, the knas is limited to the individual. Now, the other case that we had is, we've talked about now all of the different types of sales to an akum, collection by making it collateral to an akum, forcible collection for a chov, forcible stealing. We've talked about all of these different cases. We talked about the nature of a sale, a partial sale, a sale for an amount of time, a sale that protects the Eved, and so on. What about the other part? Remember that we had a completely different piece in the Mishnah, and that was if you sell your Eved to someone who lives in Lakewood, then obviously it's the same thing. You're going to have to free him because now he's not going to be able to be Mekayim the Mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael and all of the dinim of not going out of Eretz Yisrael. You forced him to go out of Eretz Yisrael. It's the same issue. You have to give him a get shichur. It's a Tanur Rabban. Amocher avdo lechutz laretz, yatsa lecherut, but you do need a get shichur. It's not an automatic get shichur, like we said before about the case of the Akum. And what's more interesting is that the person who gives the get shichrur is the person who purchased it. We're talking about over here, you sold it to a yeshiva guy in Lakewood, obviously, not to a goy. And since he did an avera in buying that eved, of course, nobody even realizes that's an avera. I mean, after all, you yourself live in Lakewood. Why can't your eved live in Lakewood? But no, actually, it's a very good reminder that you have to free him. So we are kines the buyer. Later on, the Gemara is going to ask, why dafka the buyer? What kines is supposed to sell it? But in any event, it's the second owner, that is to say, the one who bought it. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, well, it's not so simple. There are times, pa'amim shiyatza, pa'amim lo yatza. So let me explain to you. For instance, a guy says, ploni avdi mechartir lo ploni antuki. Okay, so a guy writes a shtar. In the shtar, he says, I'm selling my Eved to Yossi the Lakewooder. Okay, so now the question is, what is Yossi the Lakewooder? Yossi the Lakewooder could be someone who once lived in Lakewood, and because of that, we call him Yossi the Lakewooder. Doesn't mean, chas v'shalom, that he lives in Lakewood now. So in that case, lo yatsa, because you didn't say you're selling him to Lakewood. But if you said, I'm selling him to Yossi the Lakewooder in Lakewood, oh, then he's Yatsa. So notice, it has to be very clear from the contract that, in fact, you are taking him to Chutz Laretz. Not that you're just selling him to a person who's from Chutz Laretz. But wait, Reb Shimon, it says in the Braita, it says in a very different way than you said it. It says, Mechartiu la'antuki. I sold it to the Lakewooder. It's Yatsa. But if I say, I'm selling it to the Lakewood who lives in Beit Shemesh, Lantuki Ashori Balud. That's okay. Lo Yetza. But that means, according to this, an Antuki implies that he is actually currently living in Antukia. So even though that is Barnea's neighborhood, and he stands staunchly in favor of people who live in Antukia, the bottom line is, you're going to have to send that Eved to freedom, which raises the question of how could Antukia be in Barnea's neighborhood, since Barnea is a Kohen and would certainly never be Yotze L'Eretz Amim. This is a question that we're going to have to take up with Rav Barnea. But in any event, you see from here that the only way that he would not be Yotze is if you specify that even though he's a Lakewooder, he lives in Lud. Barnea has been pressing people to buy in Lud lately because of the special deals that are available. It's the last place where you can get a good deal, at least in Merkaz Haaretz. You've got other aitzes for people who are ready to go south, right, young man? Absolutely. Okay, so in that case, lo yatsa. So this is not like Rav Shimon ben Gamliel. So is there a difference between the two cases? Yes, there is. What Rav Shimon ben Gamliel said was talking about a guy who actually owns a house in Eretz Yisrael. So if he owns a house, then we can assume that he's the Lakewooder who comes from Lakewood. But if he owns a home, he's not going back to Lakewood. Because of that, Rabbi Shimon said, okay, so as long as he owns a house, we're not going to be Kenes that have to buy the Eved back. Masha'in Kain, the second price, is talking about an Antuki, a Lakewooder, but he doesn't own a home. He's just renting a place. So, ha, Ditlu Shpiza Beretzo, has where to live. That's why we call him in Eretz Yisrael. But nonetheless, since it doesn't say Beferish that he lives here, so then we look at it as a temporary resident. By Rabbi Yirmi, I have another question as to what we call a sale of an Eved. Let's imagine a case. A guy comes from Bavel, and he does a shidduch in Eretz Yisrael with his intent to move back with his new wife that he's going to take from Eretz Yisrael to move to Lakewood. Now, the question is, since that wife now may bring into the marriage the Avadim and the Shvachot that have been working for her, and he's going to move back to Lakewood with them, so then essentially what the woman has done is she has gone ahead and sold her Avadim to Lakewood, in which case you should have to free them, right? So Ben Bavel, and he intends to go back to Bava, then that sale, so to speak, the marriage itself is like a sale, isn't it? So, Mao, would that be the equivalent of sending your Eved to Chutz Laaretz, selling your Eved to Chutz Laaretz or not? And look, I know what you're going to tell me, but I'm asking this question. According to all of the opinions as to what the status is of the woman's tzon barzel during the period that the husband is using him. Now, you'll recall that the nechasim that a woman brings into a marriage are separated into two types, right? We have nechse melug, where over there the husband does not own the property at all, but he has the right to repair us. And whatever, property remains the woman. Anything that happens to it, it's her problem, not his problem. Then we have nechse tzon barzel. The tzon barzel we call tzon barzel because it's as if they're made out of steel. In other words, you are responsible for that property. We actually evaluate the property in the ksuva, which were worth X amount of money. You take the full responsibility for that X amount of money. Anything that happens, you're going to have to take care of it, whether it's your fault, you're not fault, makes no difference. During the time of the marriage, you are also obviously able to utilize those properties, and therefore the machlokas comes in a case where, let's say that she had avadim v'shvachot, and you get divorced. Now, you like these avadim v'shvachot as the husband, so you tell her, okay, look, I don't want to give you back these avadim v'shvachot. I'll pay you full market value as agreed to in the ktuvah, that this is what they were worth. I'm going to give you what they're worth. So there, if she insists, and she says, listen, these are the avadim shvachot that I grew up with. I don't want you to have them. I want to take them back. I'm not interested in the money. I'm interested in them. What's the din? So one man diomer says hadin ima, and one man diomer says hadin imo. I tell you, says the Gemara, that I'm willing to ask this question in both directions. And it will make sense in both directions. Let me explain to you why. I would ask like this. We do what she wants. In other words, she gets to maintain her rights. And she can demand the Eved itself, right? Okay, so then if that's the case, can you really call it a sale? It wasn't a sale. If she's able to recoup upon divorce or death of her husband, she gets back exactly what it was that she had. So in what sense is it a sale? So I would ask it. That would be the obvious way you would think, right? Or I could say, no. The bottom line is that given to Mishab de Leila Pera, he has such a strong she'ibud on it that he can use it for whatever he wants. So therefore, maybe it is considered to be, in terms of this halacha, it's considered to be the equivalent of a sale of an eved to chutz la'aretz, and therefore the husband would have to let him go because he's the rabbi Hasheni. Or I could say it the other way around. I could say, tibayleman diyomra adin imo. So the first obvious way I would look at it would be to say, well, if the din is imo, so then she sold it to him, right? Because he gets to keep it. He doesn't have to return it. He may have to pay for it, but paying for it is a sale. So that means that she sold it. So kiven shadin imo, it's considered to be his entirely, right? Odioma kiven lokoni le legufe. Or do we say, he never made it? If he had already gone ahead and bought it, yes. But he was never kona the guf. He was only kona it currently for the payrot. When he goes in and he's coming for the goof, fine, so then it'll be a sale, but currently it's not a sale. So meanwhile, it's considered to be kedida. Take it. That question remains standing. Omer Rebbe Abohu, you know, I was taught by Rebbe Yochanan that if an Eved follows the Adon out to Surya, now remember that Surya has some of the Dinim of Eretz Yisrael and some of the Dinim of Chutz La'aretz. You remember we've talked about Surya, what exactly the problem is and the limitations of Kedushas Yisrael and Surya. And the Gemara said that Surya is considered to be a Kivush Yochid. And the question over there was, is it simply because of the fact, as the Medrash indicates, that David HaMelech did not, this is Aram Tzova, where David HaMelech had all of those battles and succeeded in acquiring all of that property to the north of Eretz Yisrael. So this is part of Syria today. So now the question is, since he did this before he captured the entirety of Eretz Yisrael, it does not have the full Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. That's one possibility. The other possibility is he did not do it with called Sanhedrin and Yisrael behind him. Okay, we spoke about that issue before, but whatever it is, Surya has only a partial din of Eretz Yisrael. When it comes to the inyonim of Mechira of an Eved to Chutz La'aretz, the Rabbanan were metakein that Surya has the same din as Mechira to Chutz La'aretz. Now, suppose a Rav leaves to Surya and the Eved goes along with the Rav. He's not going to make a big fuss about it. Now, he could. The din is that if an Eved, or a member of the family, refuses to go to Surya, you cannot force him to go to Surya. And he can insist that you either stay in Eretz Yisrael or you sell him to someone who lives in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. Now the question is like this. If the Rav sold him in Surya, and he didn't just keep him along with him, the family, then that is considered to be Yotze L'Chirut, as if you had sold him to Lakewood. But how could that be? We have a Braita. Rabbi Chiya said that there's a Braita that says Ibeid et Zchuto. The very fact that he was willing to go along with the Adon, when the Adon left the Surya, means that he now loses the right to be given a get shichur, because he should never have gone. So how come now we're saying that he is actually given a get shichur? I don't understand. Lokasha, wait a minute. What were the circumstances of his leaving to Surya? Khan, what Rabbi Yochanan was talking about, is where the Rav had said to the Eved, I'm going to be going for a couple of months to Surya, and then we'll be going back home. So he figured, okay, for a couple of months, I'll go along with him to Surya. And then he decides that he's going to sell him in Surya. Now, over there, he never was willing to leave Eretz Yisrael. So there, Enoch Inami, he would be freed. Masha'in came where the Rav had left with Ein Dat Rabbo Lazar. So that means that he gives up on out of his own free will to move to Syria. Well, so then we're not going to protect him by giving him a get shichra either. And it says this basically in the Braita, Vatanya. Yotzei Eved Acher Rabbo LaSuria. An Eved follows his master to Syria. Well, wait a minute. The Gemara now interrupts. What do you mean an Eved follows his Rabbo to Syria? This is not such halacha. If the Rav moves to Syria, the Eved has every right to say, I refuse to accompany you. So why are you saying he goes to Syria? Yotzei. What, lo sagi lo nafik? He's got no choice? He's supposed to be Yotzei? It doesn't make sense. It's a beferish omission that we had in Ksuvas, that ein hako motzin. Nobody can force a member of the family or a member of the avodim to follow them out to chutz l'aretz. No, okay, sorry. Can I correct that, please? Yotza ha'evet. Thank you. Now can I be finished? Yotza ha'evet achar rabo l'Syria. So if the Eved accompanied the Rav to Syria, and Michoro Rabosham, then it depends. And now the Braita speaks out both of the possibilities that we had actually used to explain the difference between the cases that we had before. Imdat Rabolax, or so then Kofinoto, we do force the pyre to give him a get shichrur. Why? Because the Eved thought, I'm just going for a week, whatever, but I'll be back. But in Ein Da'at Rabo Lachzor, then the Eved never intended to do such a thing, and in that case, Ein Kofinoto. Amar Rav Hanan, I can't believe I did this. I can't believe I did this. I heard from Shmuel the psak about two halachas were driving me nuts, and I can't remember what he said about which one, which I got them mixed up. Oh, gosh. Shemat mini to my Shmuel Tarte. So I heard two piskei halachas. One of them was about what we were just talking about, where your mocher, your evet, luchutzlart, it's your mechuyev, to give the get shichra, the buyer. And I heard another psak about this other halacha of hamocher sadeu bishnato yovel atzma. It's a big machlokas about what the din is if somebody sells a field during yovel itself. Right? So now what's the halacha? Does Yovel have to take place on the field, or is it just that the field isn't sold? This is a big machlokas. And the machlokas is gufa between Rav and Shmuel. Rav says the field is a good sale. And if it's a good sale, that would mean, for instance, you would be able to do a kinyan agav karka. So let's say you want to buy some sheep at the same time. You could be kuna agav karka of the field. But it immediately goes back to the seller. So in other words, it's an instantaneous transaction, but it is an actual legal transaction, and therefore it will have implications, legal implications in terms of kinyonim, particularly in terms of kinyanaga. Shmuel says, no. Look, remember what the din is about on your daughter once she's yotzei b'simonim, right? So what do we make of kal v'chomer? If she's yotzei b'simonim, obviously you can't sell her once she already was magia l'simonim. But I think it's true of a year. If you sold a field, it's going to be yotzei b'yovel. So then that means you can't sell the field if it is yovel, taina Shmuel, right? And therefore, there was no sale at all. It's not that you come in and it goes out. It doesn't work that way. It works by preventing the sale in the first place. So eina mechura kol ikar. And that means it never left the rishus of the seller, and therefore there never was a opportunity to do a kinyan agav. Now, this is the machlokas. Rav Anna now says, now I asked them what the din would be about getting your money back. And Shmuel told me, in one case you get your money back, and in the other case you don't get your money back. And I can't remember which was which, whether if you sell your eved to chutz la'aretz, you know. So is the money returned for the sale, since it's an illicit sale? You sold your field during Yovel. So if you're saying you get the field back immediately, or it's not even a sale, does that mean that you keep the money, though? Or do you have to return the money? And in one of them, Shmuel said, you do have to return the money. And in one of them, he said, you don't have to return the money. And I can't remember. I don't remember which one was which. And as always happens in these cases, Rabbi Yosef, who is blind, says, let's see. Because maybe you guys don't know how to think, but we can see. Nirzeana. Figure it out yourself, man. The Braita said, Hamocher Abdolo Chutzla Arts, Yatzal Lecherut, Vitzorich Get Shichrur, Mirabo Sheini. Okay. Who is the one that legally owns this Eved? Rabo Hasheini. That's very clear. He's the one that we're giving the knas to. Which means that as far as the person who sold it is concerned, this was a perfectly legal, binding transaction, and now let the poor guy in Lakewood deal with the problem, right? Okay. So then if that's the case, the sale was a kosher sale. Why should I give him his money back? So Shmai Mina Kanyo Rabo Sheini Velo Hadres Vinyan. So I'm not going to give him his money back. Why should I? Part of it's part of the knas, is that he's the one that has to free him, and he's the one who lost the money. Fine. Now, when Shmuel said that a field in Yovel isn't sold, he means that the money has to be given. In that case, the money is given back to the buyer. Is that sort of clear, isn't it? No, it isn't. Because Rav Anan says, I'm not sure about this. I'm not sure about this. Because, first of all, he did not know about the Brisa, that the Rabo Sheini. So that part he didn't know. Now you'll say, okay, but you can figure out, can't you? I mean, what are you, stupid? If Shmuel says that it was never sold, then obviously you have to keep back the money. I mean, how in the world can you keep money on a non-sale? So what was his question, Ravanan? A beautiful question. Ravanan was aware of the fact that Shmuel said a very fascinating halacha, which on the surface seems wild. He says like this, because Imi de Shmuel, if you're going to tell me that it wasn't sold, I do not understand how you jumped to the conclusion, Rabbi Yosef, that that would ipso facto mean that you get the money back. Maybe. He means that the sale is not a legal sale, but you get to keep the money anyway. Why? Because you meant to give it as a matana. Listen, this is crazy halacha. A guy goes over to his sister, and he says, Hareat mekudeshetli, with this beautiful diamond ring. He gives a diamond ring to his sister, and he says, you should be my wife. Shmuel says, listen, nobody thinks they can make the sister their wife. Basically, what he's doing is a cutesy way of giving her a gift so that she doesn't start saying, no, it's okay, I don't want a gift, and so on. It's sort of an irresistible gift kind of thing, right? So he meant to give it to her as a matana. So maybe, since according to Shmuel, where it's obvious to people that this is ridiculous, then we interpret their desire ultimately is to be transferring money. So then maybe that's the point over here too. So just like over there, Miridave Amakadeshet Achoto, the Itma, Amakadeshet Achoto, Rav says, well, give the money back. Shmuel says, you don't give the money back because it was meant as a matana. So we might have thought that that's true over here as well. Kamash Malan, look, I mean, when it comes to giving your sister a diamond ring to be your wife, everybody understands that to be the umdana that Shmuel Tainas, he wants to give it as a gift. Mashainkin, when it comes to a sale of a field in Yovel, what do you tell me? Everybody knows it doesn't have a legal status of a sale. No. So in that case, Enachina, Shmuel holds, the money should be returned. All right, Rabotai. Very good. So what we've done is we reviewed the various possibilities of the definitions of Mechira, and that is the Mechira to an Akum, taken, mashkond, mortgaged, legally transferred in court, and what times you are supposed to be allowed to legally transfer, and we've talked about where things were stolen from you, whether you're allowed to recoup the money in the event that you get that opportunity, and we've talked about the sale of an Evet to Chutz La'aretz, who is the one that's responsible? We'll get to the details of why tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, who is responsible, and what the din is of these kinds of situations where the sale may be legally valid on the surface, but achieves absolutely nothing. Do you get your money back or not? Very exciting continuation of the issues of the Shichur of an Evet, so mechuber to the dinim of Gitei Isha, that they derive fundamentally from the Vekatav La Sefer Kritut. And now, a word from our sponsor for a trip upcoming to Antioch and Lakewood by your favorite tour leader. Yes, Rabbanea.
serious note, they put in references about the Antioch being above El and the boundary of Eretz Yisrael. And one of the most moving experiences of my life was being in the tunnel that Jewish slaves recorded by Cheney dug for Titus and Vespasian. It's called the Titus and Vespasian Tunnel. Their names are engraved there. And we read there the Medrash that the Golan, Rabsid Level, will come to the boundary of Eretz Yisrael and sing Shira. So we read the Kina of Nebuchadnezzar and Antiochesar versus Yitzias Mitzrayim, and then we read that Medrash, and it was very, very moving. On the lighter note, I don't know if Rebbe was aware of the deep relationship between Lakewood and Antioch.
No. Because I must admit to having slipped.
Yes, it's Antioch on the Orontes. That's the way it's called. Now, the Hellenistic city from 300 BCE may not be the biblical Tel, which is Rivla, and which is the Antioch that we're referring to, which could be nearby. It's nearby. But Yerushalmi and the Midrash Rabbi used the word Daphne Shil Antioch. And one of the Mefarshim, I don't know who the Memrish is that brought it, says it's named for the trees, the Daphne. So it's water and wood, just like Lakewood. It's river, wood, and it's Lakewood. I had to mention it, you know, it doesn't happen every day.
Yeah, no, it's very sweet. Okay, everyone, wonderful. And we just wanted to urge Gabi to be careful, unless he's already, yes, because he may not have noticed that he crossed about 20 minutes ago the cow protective path, which means that these cows might be coming out of the woods at any moment. So watch out for dangerous Gabi cows. All right, everybody, Kotov. Take care.